Welcome to the Flow Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording, and it is 2:15 p.m. and that is Central Time. Today is April 11th. I thought we'd kick off in Asia with Japan, and the Nikkei was down about 164 points, and it's continuing to pull back from the region of the 200-day moving average. That's despite the fact that it's having a nominal tailwind from the depreciation of the yen. So if we look at it in for example, US dollar terms, where the dollar has been strengthening, then it's been in a clear downtrend for over a year. So, still not successfully attracting foreign direct investment directly into the stock market, at least not yet. But Japan certainly doesn't trade on a big valuation differential relative to everywhere else. And we haven't seen hedged exposure or hedged demand for Japanese equities improving. And probably that's more to do with the fact that what we're seeing right now is yield curve control, not the kind of enthusiasm about economic growth and banishing deflation that we had with the initial big surge and the simultaneous fiscal stimulus that we had a decade ago. We also had a rather negative day in China today, and the CSI 300 was down a couple of percent and continuing to pull back here from the most recent highs. We also had a negative day on the H share index in Hong Kong. So that's the Hong Kong listed Chinese companies. So it's still holding the low put in March, but we're certainly seeing some evidence of resistance around the 1,000 level, and we're quite likely to see at least a retest to the low or somewhere close to it before we get a higher reaction low. Tencent would normally have done well in this kind of environment. There were some computer game licenses were permitted today for the first time in over a year, but the share continues to pull back, and well, it's clearly an acceleration higher in 2021, a big decline, some consolidation between, or I guess distribution to be more accurate, between the 1,000-day and the 200-day moving average, and then failure to push back up into the overhead trading range. So this continues to look like a downtrend, despite the fact that we had climactic action and a really big upper dynamic. We definitely still need to see evidence of a successful higher reaction low and subsequently to push on to new recovery highs in order to really confirm that a low is in fact in. Then the RBI in India has decided that they're going to begin to start raising interest rates and be less aggressive in defending the currency. So the Nifty was in negative territory in here today, and the rupee was a little bit weaker. And India has as much of an inflation problem as everywhere else. When we think about what's going on in Australia, well, it was one of the few stock markets that was in positive territory. The ASX is still right in the region of the peaks from back in 2021. Now, I don't know how long that relative outperformance is going to persist, particularly in view of the fact that Wall Street was down over 2% in here today. But Australian government bonds are among the highest in the world. New Zealand bonds are higher again in terms of yields at over 3%. When we think about the Australian dollar, well, with commodity prices being quite firm, then one would think that commodity-related currencies should be doing better. But the US dollar is particularly firm against just about everything right now because of the higher yields that the Treasury market are commanding, and they're not all that dissimilar from what's available on in the Australian dollar. Now, when we think about the broad commodity complex, oil prices continue to deteriorate and are now back below the $100 area. So this is the region of the low from back in the middle of March, It's a potential area of support, and of course, $100 is a big psychological level. But economic growth in China is certainly moderating. Now, there's forecasts that growth this year will be around 5% instead of being 5.5%. And that sounds really very ambitious. And of course, it also implies that the current malaise, owing from the lockdowns or because of the rising COVID cases, not simply in Shanghai, which is by far the most publicized, but there are COVID cases now in over 20 provinces. And it's looking increasingly likely that Guangzhou will also be locked down. That's going to hit demand for oil, and it's going to represent a problem in terms of domestic inflation, particularly food items. And there have been multiple stories of people going hungry in Shanghai, which in many respects is a travesty given that it is basically a first world city. So oil prices are right in the region of where support needs to come back if this breakout is going to be sustained, and there's no guarantee that that's going to happen. Now, when we then think about what's going on in Europe, well, the Euro Stoxx index is also pulling back from the lower side of the overhead trading range. Now, we had a really powerful rebound from the lows in mid-March, but it's got to do more than that. And we're right in the region of the 1,000-day moving average now. Now, there have been plenty of times over the course of the last decade when the index has dipped below it. And in order for there to be a secular trend, then the 1,000-day moving average has to offer support. So European indices are really at the decision point right now. But the challenge is that bond yields continue to march higher. And we can see this clearly in US Treasuries, up 8.5 basis points again in here today. So up to almost 2.8%. And I think we can all remember that back in 2018, there was a lot of discussion about a sustained move above 3%, and 3.25 being the terminal value for a bear market in bonds that would break the long-term trend. Well, the quantity of debt outstanding has gone up by 25% during the pandemic, and now yields are back approaching those breakout levels from 2018 and 19. And there are huge fears about future inflation. And one thing that I find rather interesting is when we think about the quantity of debt that was outstanding with a negative yield, it was up around 17 trillion less than 2 years ago. And at the time, nobody was worried about the guaranteed loss that it implied if one held to maturity. Since then, the total of negative yielding debt has contracted to 2.5 trillion. So we're back at levels that prevailed in 2015. Now everyone's worried about the potential for loss over the long term. And what we really have evidence here of is that its momentum tends to drive investor demand, because it was strong momentum in the bond markets were delivering short-term results for bond fund managers in 2019 and 20. They didn't care about the longer-term implications of negative yielding bonds, because it's not a problem when bonds have a negative yield and that yield goes progressively more negative. You only really run into trouble when it starts going out of negative territory into positive territory, and then you start really taking losses. But yields are now back at competitive levels, at least competitive to where they were just a few years ago. And we've got some really quite profound accelerations. But one thing that's also still very evident is that the 3-month yield, it's been rising, but it's not rising very quickly. So when we look at that spread between the 10-year and the 3-month, it's in fact still advancing, and it's up to 210 basis points. There's a good reason for that. It's because as inflationary pressures trump every other case for owning bonds, people can't own long-dated bonds. They have to own short-dated bonds, so they're going into the shortest maturities that they can find liquidity in. And that's compressing yields at the short end of the curve. But the Federal Reserve is talking about raising rates by 50 basis points 6 weeks from now. And that will represent a really quite profound jump higher in yields overnight. Or the alternative is that we're going to have negative yields at the short end of the curve. And that's not beyond the bounds of possibility that we could have an inverted, or we could have a really odd situation evolve in US Treasuries, or at least in Treasury bills, that there will be so much demand for short-dated paper that the yield will be quite a bit below the Fed funds rate. And that wouldn't be the first time that that's happened, but it would certainly be indicative of a quite profound sell-off at the longer end of the curve. And when we look at the 30-year, it's also ramping higher. And it was the move above 3.25% on the 30-year was what really got people worried about the integrity of the bull market in bonds 3 years ago. And it looks quite likely that we're going to get back up to test the 3% level, if not this week, then perhaps even next week. So this is contributing to weakness on stocks. There's a lot of fear about inflation. So stock markets are starting to come back down. The stock market is finally beginning to price in the potential that not only are we going to have interest rate hikes, but also there will be aggressive quantitative tightening. I suspect, or at least I think, that it is much more relevant that the Federal Reserve is talking about reducing the size of its balance sheet by $95 billion a month than any real talk about interest rates. Taking almost 100 billion a month out of circulation is basically sucking liquidity out of the global economy. It's the primary factor behind the continued strength in the US dollar. So the dollar continues to march higher. It's pausing around the 100 level on the US dollar index. But until we see either other central banks being more aggressive than the Federal Reserve, or we see the Federal Reserve easing up, then it's quite likely the dollar is going to continue to march higher. And this is going to create deflationary pressures. With a strong dollar, it means that the total assets sitting on the central banks of other central banks outside of the USA are devaluing in real time. When the Federal Reserve then begins to reduce the size of its balance sheet, then that's going to suck additional liquidity out of the global economy. So that's going to create a deflationary environment, not by targeting supply, but by in not even implicitly, explicitly targeting demand. We're only beginning to see the stock market respond to that. It does look increasingly likely that stocks are going to trade lower, and particularly those that are most susceptible to interest rates. So the Nasdaq was down 2% in here today, continuing to pull back from the region of the 200-day moving average. Now, this looks like a downtrend. We had a clear uptrend from the low in 2020. We had a series of ranges, one above another. That changed in January of this year. We have a distribution encountering resistance in the region of the 200-day moving average. Whereas all the way through the bull market, we have lots of examples of the market finding support in the region of the 200-day moving average. And the secular trend does look likely to be tested, which suggests that there's the potential for an additional 3,000 point fall in the Nasdaq before we test the region of the 1,000-day moving average. A failure in the region of the 1,000-day moving average for an index that has been rising for the last 12 years would be a really profound change. So it does look likely that that is going to be tested. And higher yields are really not good news for the growth segment of the market. Now, Amazon is in the process of issuing a fairly significant chunk of debt, and they're going to be issuing 40-year bonds, trading at a premium to treasuries of 150 basis points, which would be a 4.5% yield on a 40-year bond. Now, if we think that there's strong inflationary pressures that are going to persist indefinitely, then that's obviously not good value. On the other hand, if there's going to be more of a deflation scare, and we get the same kind of effect happening on this occasion as we did in others, because when the ECB took a trillion out of circulation, yields initially surged because of the market responding to the central bank no longer buying the bonds, and then pulled back, and in fact, the yields collapsed subsequently because of the deflation that quantitative tightening unleashed. Then we had a very similar situation with the Federal Reserve when it took $750 billion out of circulation in 2018. We had a 10% pullback at the beginning of the year, a 20% pullback at the end of the year. In 2019, deflationary fears were ramping higher. We had a problem evolve in the high yield market. And then in September of 2019, the repo market seized up. And in the space of 24 hours, the Federal Reserve had to input $450 billion. So that was the end of quantitative tightening. Interest rates were already starting to come down. Then the pandemic hit, so the easing went into overdrive. But absent that, the chances were that we were going to be moving into a recession. So if we get a reversion all the way back down to the 200-day moving average, then I think it's quite likely that this talk, excuse me, back to the 1,000-day moving average, I think this talk of massively raising interest rates is going to disappear pretty quickly, because the stock market won't pull back like that unless there are serious deflationary forces. And then we have the additional point that oil prices are weak and starting to come back down below the $100 area. And of course, high oil prices contribute to strength in every portion of the commodity market because it contributes to production costs. Natural gas prices remain quite firm. So we continue to see upward pressure on natural gas, and this is obviously the focus of attention right now because of somewhat colder weather in the USA, but also demand for exports from Europe as they deal with the major challenge of trying to wean themselves off of reliance on Russian oil and gas and coal. Italy today announced that they're going to be importing more gas from Algeria, for example. And ultimately, there will be more demand for renewable energy. But the solar sector has been pulling back because the ETF is populated by companies that both some that do well in an inflationary environment, others that don't. So we have this interplay between the companies that are very interest rate sensitive, like Sunrun, and then we have utilities that are doing really very well. But utilities doing well and being the best performing sector overall is not especially good news. And we also see that the healthcare sector has also been doing especially well. And these are very strongly defensive type companies. So when we start to see that defensives are doing especially well, it does help to remind us, or remind ourselves, of the cyclicality and the by turn nature of how markets mature. We generally see that commodities do especially well in the late stages of a bull market. And there's plenty of evidence that commodities are doing well. We had the big pop on the upside for oil prices, and a number of the agricultural commodities have gone up really quite significantly. And the futures fund, which really only does well when there's both uptrends and backwardations, continues to march higher. So commodities are doing well, and into an environment where liquidity is tightening. So there is an interval between when liquidity tightens and when it has an effect on the market. And we're in that interval right now. So growth is still present. The leading indicators, the LEIs, are not really showing alarm. PMIs are still in positive territory in the USA and Europe, although not in China. So we're in a point where it's reasonable to expect that commodities would do well. Generally, commodities do well into the end of the bull market. Defensives do well at the end of the bull market and even the beginning of the bear market, because investors seek yield and reliability more than anything else. So we're potentially entering that phase now, where this massive move in yields at the long end of the curve and the huge losses that bond portfolio managers are absorbing right now is having a knock-on effect for speculative interest more broadly. And the barometer of liquidity, for markets at least, Bitcoin was down $3,000 in here today and closing out the day below 4,000. And of course, we had the Miami conference concluding over the weekend, and you had Cathie Wood there repeating her forecast that there was going to be a $1 million price tag on Bitcoin. But if Bitcoin were to get to $1 million, it would really mean that the dollars themselves are virtually worthless. And we have to also remind ourselves that the times when Bitcoin has done best has been during periods when there was massive money printing. And we have the opposite condition today. So until we start to see central banks turning around, we can anticipate that interest rate sensitive portions of the market are going to continue to deteriorate, that eventually commodities and defensive sectors will roll over. Now, that would imply that we're going to head into a bear market. I personally think that central banks are going to relent well before we get into a prolonged bear market environment, and that we will be moving back into a money printing environment before long. But there's no evidence of it yet, and we're going to have to see some evidence that central banks can cling to say that inflation has been vanquished before they will have cover to reverse policy. And that suggests that prices will go down before we get a rebound that's sustainable. And I think with that, I'll leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.
Thank you.